You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405 on this wonderful day here in Southern California. We have a great guest today. We're going to be talking to Stacy Gordon, who is a diversity, inclusion, and career strategist here in Southern California. So welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405, Stacy.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate being invited to chat with you today.
Well, good. So when you talk about being a diversity, inclusion, and career strategist, tell me what that means.
So what that means is for our company, I started a company called Rework Work, and I started off actually as a recruiter and found myself working with a lot of companies that were struggling to hire. And over time, what I found is that I was having to work extremely hard to get women and to get professionals of color hired. Black men, black women, you know, Asian women, people with an accent. It was just, if you weren't the, you know, exact norm, it was harder to get them a job. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, why is that happening? You know, it's kind of naive. And so I transitioned from, because I thought, well, maybe it's the people, you know, they're not ready, right? So I started coaching and doing a lot of coaching, one-on-one career coaching with candidates. And I realized, well, it's not just them, right? It's both. It's both and. So it was the companies needed training and the candidates themselves needed professional development. So we operate in the space of the intersection really between workforce and the workplace. And where those two things overlap, and we realize that companies need to do the diversity and inclusion training, but we also need to do those career strategies and development. And companies actually need to do it, because many times they'll say, well, why would we develop our employees so that they can leave? And I'm like, well, if you develop them and they stay, I mean, if you don't develop them and they stay, what have you got? A bunch of stagnant workers.
Right. What's the price of not training them? Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I have heard that that conversation many times. So when you work with people, you help them find people, or are you taking down the barriers to their thinking in terms of looking for people?
Yes, so we are taking down the barriers. We used to help them find. We don't really do as much of that anymore. We do more focusing on the on helping people really just rethink the way that they're doing business. We talk about kind of stopping and thinking about why we're doing what we're doing. Why did we pick up that particular resume? Why are we speaking to this particular person? Why have we asked this guy instead of this woman, you know, to lead the project? You know, have we thought about that? Or are we just going on gut feel and instinct? Are we just going on the person who happens to be closest to us? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like, do we have standard processes that we're putting in place that can be replicated and used across the organization?
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. Now, you will train people to hire better. Is that right? Train companies?
Yes. Yes.
Have you ever thought about what goodwill does?
Goodwill in terms of the organization?
Yes.
I mean, they are helping people who are normally sort of at the lower socioeconomic, what am I trying to say here? And a lot of times they're people who have been, you know, homeless. They have been recently incarcerated. And I think it's really important to get that talent back to work. And in fact, there's a whole movement right now. If you look at SHRM, I think it's like hashtag getting talent back to work. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's great that you want to make a hashtag out of it, but these are people's lives.
Right.
And we need to help them, get employed, right? It's really important that we do this. So, I think that looking at that as a source of talent, they really have been an overlooked source. And especially in this day and age where you have companies saying, I can't find talent, but you have so many people saying, I can't find work.
Right.
You know, and so
right.
It's like, don't let the unemployment numbers fool you, because yes, it's low, it's 3.8% or whatever it is right now, but that's because they're not looking at people. You know, many of those people are not gainfully full-time employed, and yes, they want to be.
Yeah, Goodwill works particularly with disabled people, people that the world would look at as somehow limited, and they find work for them. They have like 27,000 people that they've placed in jobs that they are working right now. And their biggest issue is not finding people to help, but in finding employers who are willing to, or who can see the value that these people can bring to them.
Well, I think your first, what you started to say first is more accurate, right? Who are willing to do it.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's really part of it, is that we have a barrier that we put up. And, you know, I think one of the things that I was thinking about is how it is that, you know, I have this passion for helping small businesses to thrive, right? And so I was looking up some of the statistics that are out there, and the SCORE, and also there's a report by, it's like the State of the Women-Owned Business report by American Express or something, right? Mm-hmm. But they did all these surveys, and they looked at it, and they did this whole research, and they have found that, you know, as of 2018, that there were 12.3 million women-owned businesses in the U.S.
Wow.
Right. And so why is that, right? In 1972, there were only 402,000 women-owned businesses. Mm. So now, women own 4 out of every 10 businesses in the United States.
Wow.
And what's interesting about that, the reason I bring these stats up, is if you think about the fact that just last year, actually 2017, more than 1,800 new women-owned businesses were launched every day.
Every day?
And out of that,
oh my goodness,
every day. And out of that, 64% of them were started by women of color.
Uh-huh.
So I bring these statistics up because, as a Black woman, right, I've always been around the demographic of women who want their businesses to thrive. And I used to work in, I've had a very varied background. I worked in real estate. I also worked in financial services. And in those industries particularly, I feel like you are a small business owner under a large brand umbrella. Right.
Yes,
if you
yes.
work for Keller Williams or New York Life or Prudential or, you know, any of those insurance type companies or real estate firms, you are having to run your own business, but you've got the brand backing to help. Right.
Right. Right.
And so I think that as you look at those individuals, I've always been in roles where I wanted to help them to thrive. Right. Help them to be more successful in their careers. And because when you do that, they can take better care of their finances, they have more control over their lives, and they can take better care of their families. And I think that is a huge and important thing for us to do in this world, right? Is to leave it a better place than we found right. it.
Well, and they also
and you can do that by...
right, but they also then can make a bigger contribution to the world, right?
Right, exactly. Right. I mean, and I think that it's vital to our economy, right?
Yeah.
If small businesses are successful.
Right. Right. So who are the kind of people that you work with?
So we work with really, and I hate to say it this way, because I remember business school, my marketing professor said, you never say you want to work with everyone, right? You need to make it really, really
right.
specific, right?
Right?
You just need to be able to bring it down to the specifics. But for us, we really look at targeting people who have acknowledged that they want to do better.
Mm-hmm.
So our core target is really people who said, yes, I know we can do better,
mm-hmm.
but we don't know how, and we want help.
Mm-hmm.
So Maya Angelou said that when you know better, do better. And that's our job, right? We want to help companies know better.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to preach to the choir, right? Those people who are already doing a great job, because like, good, go on and continue. But we also don't want to butt our heads against a brick wall either. And there's a whole contingent of people who don't see the value in what we do.
Mm.
And if you don't see the value, I don't have time to help you figure that out. You need to go to somebody else for that.
Well, you must have some core values that you work with, right?
We do. For us, it's about transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And trust. Mm-hmm. Those are the two, because if you're transparent with the people that you work with, then you can build trust. And when people trust you, they will follow you anywhere. And they will do, you know, that they'll get, they'll be part of that mission. They'll want to help, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and when you're transparent and you can be clear about what your goals are, those people that are, that want to participate can, and those that don't want to can say goodbye, right? Mm-hmm. And go someplace else.
Well, so what would you say?
That's really important.
How would you put your purpose or your cause or your passion? What would you say that really lights your fire in terms of working with these companies?
So our company vision, and this is actually new because it's taken me a really long time to come up with this, right? But our company vision is to make all the difference in the world. And while that sounds like some lofty social justice goal, it really means that we understand how important work is in our current global society. And so if you can help even one person to get a job, or you can help one person to advance in their job, you end up helping a whole community. Mm-hmm. And so by making that difference, by helping companies to hire better, hire more people, to be more open in the people that they will hire, then you're helping them to make such a difference. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, I look at, you know, I'm a big stats person. I look at the UN, right, has done the research to show that women's economic empowerment boosts productivity, right? And so increasing female employment rates boosts the GDP mm-hmm. by over like trillions of dollars, right? So, but conversely, it's estimated that gender gaps cost our economy 15% of GDP. So when we are saying we're not going to hire specific types of people or whatever person, right, fill in the blank, you are stopping that person from contributing to society. You're stopping that person from contributing to their household. You're stopping that person from being a contributing member to society. And then they are thereby a drain on our community, whereby mm-hmm. they would much rather be out there working, contributing, helping to empower their family so that they can do the same.
So would you say that your purpose is to help companies hire better?
It's definitely part of it, right? It's help them to hire better, and it's a big part of it because hiring is where you can have the biggest impact on a company culture. Because mm-hmm. every time somebody leaves or is hired from a company, your culture changes just a little bit. And mm-hmm. when you're hiring, that's a place where you really can make a huge impact.
Mm-hmm. So, and now you said that you work with everybody, but who are your ideal clients?
So our ideal clients are the small businesses, the small nonprofits that want to start from the beginning and do this right. Mm-hmm. It's so much easier to start from the beginning and build it better than to have to retroactively try to change a culture. It's like trying to turn a huge ship, right? Mm-hmm. It just takes forever. And so working with smaller, more nimble companies mm-hmm. is really rewarding because they don't have as much red tape. You don't have as many people to have to go through. And you have a cohesive group usually that have said, yes, you know what, we are interested in making this change. And we see the importance of it. We see the economic viability of it. And we actually want to do this.
Do you think out 25 years, do you have a vision for where you want to be 25 years from now with this company?
Well, interestingly enough, I would say for me, my vision would be that mm-hmm. Change has happened, right, within the world. There's all these hashtags out there, or it's like women on boards, you know, I'm just making up years now, but like by 2047, we need to have, you know, X number of women. And so I think for us, we would want to see that those things have happened. We would actually want to see change because I feel like otherwise we're living the definition of insanity, right? But we keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different outcomes. Mm-hmm. So we want to work with people that want to see different outcomes. And, you know, doing business in California is difficult because of I think you mentioned regulatory and fiscal constraints, right? And so in the next 5 years, things that businesses need to prepare for, you know, I was thinking about that and I thought, wow, if we don't change the way that we're doing business in California, most small businesses aren't going to be around in 5 years, right? Because the biggest hurdle for us right now is the independent contractor issue. My business thrives on independent contractors. If I can't appropriately work with independent contractors, my business dies. And that's the same for many, many companies. And so with this, you know, new rule, the Dynamics case that came out that changed the way that we look at independent contractors and makes them employees, that's a huge burden for small business owners.
Tell me about that rule.
Recently, I guess within the last year or so, there's a ruling that came out about the way that, you know, the independent contractor test. So for those of us that work a lot with independent contractors and we say, oh, well, they're working out of their house, they're doing their own thing, we classify a lot of people as independent contractors. Mm-hmm. But that rule has changed the way that we do that. And there are a lot of people who, in my opinion, probably should be considered independent contractors, but will no longer be considered independent contractors. And should someone sue, they could actually retroactively be considered an employee and be provided, you know, all of the benefits and wages and things that they probably would have been entitled to were they classified as an employee. And I get where, you know, California Supreme Court is coming from. They're saying, well, there are all of these large companies out there that are misusing the rules. But it impacts the small business owner really greatly.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that what the Supreme Court said was that to be classified as an independent contractor, the worker has to be free from the control and direction of the employer, right?
Yes.
And the worker performs work that's outside the hire's core business. They're not doing the same
thing. But if you look at my business, for example, right? Mm-hmm. I would hire an independent contractor for a project, right? But it might be my core business. I might work with another independent contractor who happens to do the same thing that I do, but I have a large project and I need that person to work with me for, you know, a small amount of time. They're not an employee of mine. They've got their own business. They're doing their own thing, but it's still my core business. So technically under that rule, they would not be considered an independent contractor and I'd have to hire them as an employee for that short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, why wouldn't you hire them for that short period of time?
Because they are doing their own work with other clients. And just because they're not specifically, you know, working with another client at that particular time.
Oh, okay. So then the worker customarily engages in an independent established trade, occupation, or business. I mean, that's what they do. They have a business that operates ongoing with varieties of clients, right?
Some of them, yes.
Well, that's what I'm asking. I've had consultants. I mean, I have hired people as 1099s, and to me, to be a 1099, they have to be a company, not just a person.
Right. I think I missed a little bit of what you said, but I think I got the gist. And I think that just looking at I know that my attorney, you know, we had a long conversation about who within my realm. For example, I had a virtual assistant. Mm-hmm. My virtual assistant, because she worked here in California, even though she was virtual, I didn't see her very often at all. We probably met two or three times a year. Under that rule, she would have been considered an employee, even though she had other clients.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, she would have a company, right? She wouldn't just be working for you.
Right.
Well, I mean, if she had a company, you don't hire people who have their own companies.
It was, I mean, unless I got bad advice from my attorney, all I'm saying is that there's a lot. I'm not the only one, right? In fact, the Small Business Development Center, I went in and talked with them, and they're having that same issue because their entire staff, all the people that small business owners would go to get advice for their business, from a small business development center. Mm-hmm. All of those people are independent contractors of the small business development center.
Yeah.
And all of those people are now considered employees.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's an important conversation to have. I mean, you know, that's in part what's going on with the gig economy, with Lyft and Uber and others like that, right?
Right.
It's obvious that the big bucks are going to Uber with their IPO, but the drivers are considered independent contractors.
Right. Well, and if you look at them as well, they're not even counted when as part of they're not counted as independent contractors by the Bureau of Labor Statistics if they have another full-time job. So if I'm a full-time employee and I have a job somewhere and then I happen to do Uber or Lyft on the side, I'm not counted as an independent contractor in the Bureau of Labor Statistics mm-hmm. data.
Mm-hmm.
So that completely skews the picture of our economy mm-hmm. and who's doing what.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I mean, I think that's part of what a business is about, is creating jobs for people.
Right. And,
well, that's going to be interesting because I suppose if you have an employee, then you have to pay him at least minimum wage, right?
Right.
But if you had an independent contractor, you wouldn't.
Right. I mean, well, you would have some negotiated rate that you've agreed on and,
right.
you know.
Right.
Yeah. So, and it's not even the wage so much. It's all the taxes. It's all of the payroll deductions
right.
that you have to take care of.
Right.
And then depending upon how many hours, there might be benefits. I mean, it just is
right.
a bunch of different things that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's part of the struggle that we have is helping businesses to perform in a way that it creates a living wage for people and does provide them with benefits. And I can appreciate why people would want to avoid that. At the same time, at some point, it seems to me that's part of, well, I mean, I would think that's part of what we want when we look for jobs for people is jobs that are going to be, help them sustain a good quality lifestyle.
Right. But I think, and that's, I think the difference is, are you doing a job or are you actually an independent contractor? And I do think that the rules that have been established don't necessarily answer that question appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Good. So what are you finding with the business that you're working with as those kinds of things change? What are they, how are they dealing with that?
They're struggling. You know, they are having to hire employees and have them do more with less. So now those employees are overly burdened. Whereas before, you might have been able to say, let's bring in an independent contractor to relieve some of the burden because we can afford to bring in somebody, you know, a few hours a week to help here and there. Now companies can't do that. So employees are burdened with that extra work.
Mm.
And now they don't have the ability to do the independent contractor work on the side like they would like to earn some extra money because they're too tired from their day job, which is already paying them, you know, almost nothing.
Yeah, it's a real struggle. That is a real struggle. Interesting.
For sure.
Well, what do you think businesses should be doing with this change in the rules?
You know, that's a huge economic question because I feel like cost of goods has to go up in order to be able to appropriately afford mm-hmm. the people that you need to hire. You know, I'm not an economist by any stretch of the imagination, so I'm a little out of my depth on that. But
mm-hmm.
I do think that we have to reevaluate the demands on people's time because a lot of people are struggling. In fact, I had someone call me the other day about a class that I was offering, and she said to me, oh, I'm waiting for my employer to fire me.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, why? She goes, I hate my job, but I need the unemployment. Like, people are tired, and everyone's trying to figure out how to game the system to get ahead.
Right.
And it doesn't help. I mean, I don't want to get into politics, but it doesn't help when you then look at who is in the highest office, who is gaming the system to get ahead. And you think, well, why am I here struggling to pay taxes, to do all of these things when, you know, these guys aren't? So why am I doing it?
Yeah. Right. Well, what would you like to tell small business owners? What would you, if you could speak with them, what would you like to tell them?
I'd like to tell them to keep doing what's right, regardless of what it looks like, regardless of what is going on around you, because at the end of the day, we are tasked with helping clients to overcome their challenges around diversity and inclusion, and our goal is to help them change mindsets. Mm-hmm. And it's a hard thing to do right now when their minds are stuck on other things like the economy and whether or not they can hire and whether or not they have enough employees to actually get the work done to get the product out. So there's a lot going on.
So if they wanted to talk with you about helping them to hire better, what would they do? How would they get in touch with you?
I am very getting touchable. I'm on LinkedIn. I actually have a diversity recruiting course on LinkedIn online learning, and I encourage people to check that out and to connect with me on LinkedIn. I usually accept everyone, and people send me messages all the time, and most of my clients come through there. They're always surprised that I respond, but I respond to each and every LinkedIn request, and my website also goes directly to my assistant, and we answer all of those messages as well.
Excellent. Well, it seems to me that small business owners who are looking to improve the quality of their hiring would find you very valuable.
Thank you.
And they should get on your website. What is your website?
So the website is reworkwork.com. And that name came out of frustration because one day I was saying, oh my gosh, we just need to rework everything. We need to rework hiring, recruiting, onboarding, advancement, pay. Mm-hmm. And I thought, we just need to rework work.
Right. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and it sounds like you're making a significant contribution to small business owners who are looking for ways to hire people better, with more inclusivity and more diversity.
Thank you. I appreciate you being invited to participate today.
Well, thanks a lot, Stacy. We look forward to seeing you in Orange County sometime when you're down here.
Yes, I will actually be down there at UCI June 7th. I'm doing a workshop on diversity and inclusion. So feel free to stop on by.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.